This is CKUW 95.9 FM, streaming at ckuw.ca. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us, and stay tuned. CKUW is managed by the Winnipeg Campus Community Radio Society in accordance with CRTC and Industry Canada rules and regulations. As a not-for-profit radio station, CKUW is a member of the National Campus Community Radio Association and adheres to their statement of principles to provide an alternative voice. CKUW operates on a frequency of 95.9 MHz on the FM band with 450 watts effective radiated power, or ERP. Our transmitter is located at 7 Evergreen Place in Osborne Village. Programming originates from our downtown studios at the University of Winnipeg in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We would like to hear from you and welcome your ideas to improve listening, which will be heard on CKUW in years to come. Address your comments and suggestions to CKUW 95.9 FM, Room 4, CM11, 515 Portage Avenue, Winnipeg, Manitoba, R3B 2E9. You can call 204-786-9782 or email us at ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca. This is Victoria King speaking for the Board of Directors, staff, and volunteers of CKUW 95.9 FM. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for more great community radio.
This is CKUW 95.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Winnipeg, Manitoba, on occupied Anishinaabe Aking, the homeland of the Métis and the historical territory of the Nahiyawak and the Nakota.
Good morning, friends. I'm Ron Robinson.
And I'm Carol McKibben.
We are the Saturday Morning Show, here for you live for the next 2 hours. 6 until 8, don't touch that dial. And then after that, it will be Green Planet Monitor. I don't know either. And then at 9 o'clock, Mud Puddle Radio.
Yeah.
As the mud slowly freezes. Well, we won't go there.
No. Fun for kids of all ages.
All the weather from Carol, just a minute or so. Little sports for you this half hour. Little Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Bill Tarmy this half hour. Oh. Well, inquiring minds want to know.
Yes.
Carol is waving vigorously. She's either having a stroke or she has the weather. Carol, what
I
is
do
it?
Have the weather. I just have to fix the next music up first. And now I can give you the weather. It's 3 degrees out there, which sounds about right. Barometric pressure, 101.4 and falling. Humidity, 89%. Wind coming from the south at 28. It will be sunny today, Ron. There will be some cloud in the afternoon. And the wind coming from the south at 30, and then light in the afternoon. But a high today, Ron, of 14.
Excellent.
Yep. That's the thing. The normals at this time of year, the high, zero.
Trouble with normal, it always gets worse. Bruce Coburn. Good to know. 6:04. We were humming there, the bomber song, of course, because in sports, football, CFL finals. Well, in the East, Toronto plays Montreal at 2 o'clock today. In the West, here, Winnipeg will thump Saskatchewan at 5:30. Now, celebrities in the crowd will include?
Yes.
Ron and Carol.
Oh, sorry.
Ron, yes, free ride. I was free ride, Carol.
Something else. Yes.
Go Blue.
Yes. Thank you, John.
John.
For gifting us
his tickets. He'd rather be somewhere else,
so
it turned out.
Well, yeah, somewhere warmer.
Looking at the free press from Friday, University football. Manitoba Bisons, of course, recipients of 3 major football awards Thursday. Head coach Brian Dobie, retiring after 29 seasons on the job, named Canada West Coach of the Year, while quarterback Jackson Tachinski and offensive lineman Giordano Vaccaro were named for Conference Player of the Year and Lineman of the Year, respectively. Now, that is the 6th Coach of the Year honor, the first since 2006 for Dobie. He led the Bisons to their best regular season finish, 7-1, their best in 17 years. Not good enough, as you know, because today the Regina Rams play the Saskatchewan Huskies. I think it's 1 o'clock because it could be Saskatchewan time.
I see.
And just as their math.
You could be right.
What does 13 mean to you, if you know your football?
I think they're on the same time as us at this time. I think so, but, you know.
All right, so that's today as the... No, that's a good question. It would seem to be they're playing for the BioSteel Hardy Trophy. But I see various listings calling it the Hardy Cup, but Hardy Cup as well is for hockey. So this could turn out to be a very interesting game if one of the teams shows up on skates and the other is dressed as football players. Entertaining. Hockey, the NHL, the Winnipeg Jets are flying indeed. 13-1 now. I'll repeat that. 13-1.
Man alive.
Mr. Hellebuck between the pipes. He is Vezina bound, if anybody is. Jets play the Dallas Stars today at 2. New York Rangers Tuesday at 6. And the Belfast Giants, I'll save this because I have a picture from the Belfast Giants inviting us to do this and that and the other. I'll simply say, in terms of curling, yes, little mention in today's Free Press, the Co-op Canadian Open Curling. I see the top 8 teams from the men's and the women's competitions will advance to the quarterfinals, but we don't have names for you just yet. At 6:06. Well, we moved on, as I say, and now into the your easy listening hit parade of the 40s and 50s this morning is Joe Stafford with a suggestion of Make Love to Me. You can't better that, can you? No.
Take me in your arms and never let me go. Whisper to me softly while the moon is low. Hold me close and tell me what I want to know. Say it to me gently, let the sweet talk flow. Come a little closer, make love to me. Kiss me once again before we say goodnight. Take me in your loving arms and squeeze me tight. Put me in a mood so I can dream all night. Everybody's sleeping, so it's quite all right. Come a little closer, make love to me. When you're near, so help me, dear, chills run up my spine. You is so doggone sweet. Every time we kiss, you make my life complete. Baby doll, you know you swept me off my feet. Now's the time to tell you, make love to me. So doggone sweet. Every time we kiss, you make my life complete. Baby doll, you know you swept me off my feet. Now's the time to tell you.
Stafford there from our big box of Your Easy Listening Hit Parade. And I see who wrote this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 names get credit for this song. All those names. Well, when the members of the New Orleans Rhythm Kings, who were a hot band in the 20s, realized they had something of a hit with their instrumental Tin Roof Blues, they decided to share in the royalties. So
wow.
You got your trombonist, you got your clarinet, you got your trumpet, and I'll put their names on this bluesy mood piece. Came out. House theme at Nick's Greenwich Village. And in 1953, the song was given lyrics, new middle section, the title. Push it out there. Make Love to Me. Two more names added to the credits. Joe Stafford recorded the tune in 1954, raised the author's collective spirits. by making it an even bigger hit.
When you say blues, it's easy listening blues.
Oh, I would say.
Yeah.
How do you know you got the blues? But you got holes in your shoes. But then, as Big Dave McLean says, just because we come from the wrong end of the Mississippi, don't mean we can't sing the blues. Got the Free Press book pages here with me today. And I see...
Anything interesting?
Charlie Angus there, waving his finger vigorously at the government.
He's always interesting.
Yes, always perturbed, Charlie. 1980, long before his gig as an MP, Charlie Angus, musician Andrew Cash, who also spent time as an MP, founded the punk group L'Étranger. So the new book, Dangerous Memory, longtime NDP MP Charlie Angus reflects on a life of punk rock, politics, and more in his memoir. Subtitle, Coming of Age in the Decade of Greed. There you go, that's Charlie. I interviewed Charlie way back when I was doing Nightlines about music. So this is reviewed by Christopher Adams, political science at Rector of St. Paul's College, University of Manitoba. He says, well, because Charlie's not running in the next election, perhaps this triggered a need to write about his youth. And the engaging account, says Christopher, account of the tumultuous 1980s, a decade marked by Reaganomics, anti-nuclear protests, AIDS, and the glorification of greed, among other things. So that's in today's Winnipeg Free Press. And just below that, Book and Dagger, How Scholars and Librarians Became the Unlikely Spies of World War II by Elise Graham. Now, this says that the U.S. at the start of World War II, they lacked a standing intelligence agency to gather military intelligence on its enemies. So this was redressed by the creation of the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services. And the head of the OSS, William Donovan, or Wild Bill as he was known, lawyer, war hero during the First War, made the inspired decision to staff research and analysis with unlikely spies, professors in the humanities and social sciences, as well as librarians and book collectors. But in the review, there's no mention of William Stevenson, Mr. Intrepid.
And
it was Stevenson who, I think, worked very closely with Bill Donovan. Indeed, it was Stevenson who was in Washington trying to push back against the isolationist views of the Americans against entering the war. Anyway, that's in the today's
so the
Winnipeg Free
reviewer
Press.
Says that Stevenson was not.
It's not mentioned in the review. As if it's not in the book.
Oh,
you'd think a Canadian reviewer would take. Is this
who is the reviewer? Do you dare say?
Sure, it's Graham Voyer, Winnipeg writer.
Oh, I recognize his name from.
It's a Canadian author. Somewhere. That's the other reason why I thought if Stevenson was involved, it would have worked into the book. So, finally, new in paperback, The Defector, novel by Chris Hadfield. Remember, he did a couple of thrillers.
Oh, right.
So The Defector in paperback now. And then big review by Nick Martin of Linda LaPlante's prequel.
Yes.
To her mystery, her detective, Jane Tennyson.
You just read that, didn't you?
I did, just finished it the other night. Whole Life Sentence. This will be our next book in our mystery book club at McNally Robinson Booksellers. New book club starting up in February.
Okay.
Mystery book club, by the way. And it's online now.
On Thursday afternoons.
Anybody wants to know more.
Okay.
So, Nick disappointed. It ends where it all began, says the book cover. Engaging whether that's true requires traveling through times to 1991. Extraordinary moment when Helen Mirren became Jane Tennyson. So he says, you'll sigh in exasperation. The two cases, the romance, it all just ends. You know, too many loose threads galore somehow, all leading into a book and TV show that came out 33 years ago. If this is the final time Tennyson sleuths on a printed page, it's not the ending she deserved, says Nick Martin.
But it's all a prequel, so...
Yeah, that's a little odd, too.
Yeah.
Anyways, it rattles along. I can certainly say that. But I haven't read as many Jane Tennyson books as Nick Martin has, I would imagine.
You've got a point there.
At 14 minutes after 6. Looking Monday, of course, is Remembrance Day.
Yes.
When Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah!
CD set of the Essential Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Today's Winnipeg Free Press has an insert. Well, it's got a book as well about Manitoba business, but the Santa Claus Parade.
Oh, yes.
Holy smokes, Winnipeg, join us. When? Next Saturday.
Holy smoke, that seems early.
Don't look behind you, as Satchel Paige used to say. The Santa Claus Parade's right there. More information. Okay. MB Hydro Santa Parade, one word.
Manitoba Hydro. Oh, I see.
MBHydroSantaParade.com.
Right.
Or you can call, this is good, 204-77-SANTA.
Okay.
Easy to remember, wouldn't it? Because this is about four or five pages. So it talks about the Winnipeg Christmas Market, talks about a bit of the history of the Christmas Parade.
Does it have a map?
Yes, it does.
Oh.
And it's legible. For a man with trifocals,
I'm going. Very important.
Going in a couple of weeks today. Left eye, right eye. How many fingers am I holding up? So the parade starts at 5 p.m. It starts at Portage in Maine.
Okay.
And it finishes at Memorial Boulevard and St. Mary Avenue. And they start closing down some of those streets around there at noon.
Oh, so be careful.
So you want to think about
it. When is that, Saturday?
Yep.
Next Saturday.
Yes.
Okay, well,
exactly.
We'll talk about it again maybe next
exactly.
week.
Plan your parade experience. Accessibility, yes. Stay comfortable. Getting there and back. Above all, have fun, because there are some street parties as well.
Right.
So if you got the paper, make sure you pull this out. And otherwise, I'll give you that again. MB Hydro Santa Parade. You're going to wake up in an hour and start muttering to yourself, MBHydroSantaParade.com for some reason. I have no idea. That's all about. Now, Carol, if you will stand on your chair.
Let me just put my sweater on here.
It's not too cold out there, yes, and just above your head. Okay. You can put your shoulder into it.
Yep.
Pushing the cupboard door open. I'll hand you the bamboo rod.
Give it to me quick.
Okay.
March 9th, 1941.
This is London. Soon it will be spring in England. Already there are flowers in the parks, although the parks aren't quite as well kept as they were at this time last year. The winter that is ending has been hard, but Londoners have many reasons for satisfaction. There have been no serious epidemics. The casualties from air bombardment have been less than expected. And London meets this spring with as much courage, though less complacency, than at this time last year. The other day, watching a farmer trying to fill in a 20-foot-deep bomb crater in the middle of his field, I wondered what would happen before he harvested the next crop from that bomb-torn soil. I suppose that many more bombs will fall. There'll be much talk about equality of sacrifice, which doesn't exist. Many proud ships will certainly perish in the western approaches. there'll be further restrictions on clothes and food. Probably a few profiteers will make their profits. No one knows whether invasion will come, but there are those who fear it will not. I believe that a public opinion poll on the question, would you like the Germans to attempt an invasion, would be answered overwhelmingly in the affirmative. Most people, believing that it must be attempted eventually, would be willing to have it come soon. They think that in no other way can the Germans win this war, and they will not change their minds until they hear their children say, we are hungry. So long as Winston Churchill is Prime Minister, the House of Commons will be given an opportunity to defend its traditions and to determine the character of the government that is to rule this country. The Prime Minister will continue to be criticized in private for being too much interested in strategy and too little concerned with the great social and economic problems that clamor for solution. British propaganda, aimed at occupied countries, will continue to fight without its heavy artillery until some sort of statement on war aims, or if you prefer, peace aims, has been published. And in the future, as in the past, one of the strangest sensations for me will be that produced by radio. Sometime, someone will write the story of the technical and military uses to which this new weapon has been put. But no one, I think, will ever describe adequately just what it feels like to sit in London with German bombs ripping through the air, shaking the buildings, and causing the lights to flicker, while you listen to the German radio broadcasting Wagner or Bavarian folk music. A twist of the dial gives you Tokyo talking about dangerous thoughts, an American senator discussing hemisphere defense, the clipped, precise accent of a British announcer describing the proper method of photographing elephants, Moscow boasting of the prospects of the wheat harvest in the Ukraine, each nation speaking almost any language save its own, until finally you switch off the receiving set in order that the sounds from the four corners of the earth will not interfere with the sound of the German bombs that come close enough to cause you to dive under the desk. The bombs this spring will be bigger, and there'll be more of them, probably dropped from a greater height than ever before. Berlin and London will continue to claim that their bombs hit military targets, while the enemies strike mainly churches, schools, hospitals, and private dwellings. The opening engagement of the spring campaign is now being fought in the Atlantic. The Admiralty has taken over control of the shipyards in an effort to speed up production and repairs. Merchant sinkings will probably reach alarming proportions, but there will always be men to take the ships out. The outcome of the battle in the Atlantic will be decisive. This island lives by its ships, and the ships will be carrying supplies from America. There was no dancing in the streets here when the Lease and Lend Bill was passed, for the British know from their own experience that the gap between legislation and realization can be very wide. They remember being told that their frontier was on the Rhine, and they know now that their government did very little to keep it there. The course of Anglo-American relations will be smooth on the surface, but many people over here will express regret that they believe America is making the same mistakes that Britain made. For you must understand that the idea of America being of more help as a non-belligerent than as a fighting ally has been discarded, even by those who advanced it originally. Maybe we shall hear some frank, forthright talk across the Atlantic instead of rhetoric, but I doubt it. One thing that is not to be doubted is that the decisions taken in Washington between now and the time the crops are harvested will determine the pattern of events for a long time to come. British statesmen are fond of repeating that Britain stands alone as the defender of democracy and decency. But General Headquarters is now on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. Many Britishers realize that. Not all of them are happy about it. For the policies of Washington have not always been the policies of the Tory Party, which still rules this country. Presumably, the decisions of Washington will be taken in the full light of publicity and debate. No mere radio reporter has the right to use the weight of monopolized opportunity in an effort to influence those decisions. We can only deliver to you an occasional wheelbarrow load of stuff, tell you where it comes from, what sort of air raid shelter or bastion you build with it, is a matter for free men to decide. But since part of reporting must necessarily be personal, I'd like to end this with my own impression of Britain on the verge of spring and big events. There's still a sense of humor in the country. The old feeling of superiority over all other peoples remains. So does class distinction, There is great courage and a blind belief that Britain will survive. The British aren't all heroes. They know the feeling of fear. I've shared it with them. They try to avoid thinking deeply about political and social problems. They'll stand any amount of government inefficiency and muddle. They're slow to anger, and they die with great dignity. They will cheer Winston Churchill when he walks through block after block of smashed houses and offices as though he brought them a great victory. During a blinding raid, when the streets are full of smoke and the sound of the roaring guns, they'll say to you, "Do you think we're really brave or just lacking in imagination?" Well, they've come through the winter. They've been warned that the testing days are ahead. Of the past months, they may well say, "We have lived a life, not an apology." And of the future, I think most of them would say, "We shall live hard, but we shall live."
November 7th,
19... Ancient radio waves. Edward R. Morrow there reporting.
Wow.
From England in the spring of 1941.
Quite pointed.
He was there for the duration, as my father would say.
Right.
627 then.
Your father was there for the duration.
He was, signed on 1939, came home in 1945. Tarby, Anybody who's a Coronation Street fan of any duration will remember, a.k.a. Jack Duckworth.
Yes.
What was distinguishable about his eyeglasses, Carol?
Well, he always had tape on them.
That's it, exactly.
They were broken taped together.
I'm not saying that Vera did that, but... And he would disappear. She would send him down to change the barrel.
Yes.
In the room, and he wouldn't come back. He'd just disappear. Who knows what's going on down there, Jack? Because on Coronation Street, sometimes if a child goes upstairs to do their homework, sometimes they would come down with
a
new head.
Up there for a couple of years and come back with a new head.
That's what I think. But he was there with Vera, of course. Do we have an equivalent couple today? Because there are certain characters or characteristics you like to see on the show on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. I guess the closest would be Fizz and Tyrone, but
They're living in Jack and Vera's house.
That's true.
The problems, they are. Now you think of it, they are the younger couple, Coronation Street, seen on CBC television.
I mean, she's not the battle axe that Vera was, but...
There were is it five episodes?
And he's not
now?
The layabout that Jack was.
No, very true. Very true. Nobody can match Jack for that.
Yeah, true.
And there's an omnibus, of course, Sunday mornings as well, if you can't catch it through the day.
Through the week.
Through the week.
At
7 o'clock.
Yep.
But there's two episodes on Friday, is that right?
That's right.
Yes, take note of that at 6:32. Well, we're turning now, since we're not just a pretty set of ears here on the Saturday morning show. No.
We're not.
We have advice to share.
Oh.
From Dear Mary from the Spectator magazine on 21st of April, 2007. Question. I am a French teacher, quel dommage, at a rural RC comprehensive school. Recently, I took a small group of children on an exchange trip and we stayed at a rather grand public school in France. The return leg will shortly happen. My difficulty is that the mother of one of my pupils appears wholly lacking in any maternal feelings and has, according to my police officer wife, the appearance of being a user of illicit drugs. Furthermore, the child has had a succession of uncles, in quotation marks, following the violent death of her natural father.
This is at a Roman Catholic school?
The mother did not attend one of the preparatory meetings, and I am concerned that she will be unable to offer adequate care to her daughter's exchange partner. I do not want this woman to feel further marginalized, but I cannot believe it is fair on the exchange partner to bring her into such a situation. Many of the other pupils are from equally humble backgrounds, but will have no difficulty in making their partners feel at home. I can easily find a substitute for this particular partner, and I would hope that I can involve the daughter in the return leg. How can I tell this young mother that her daughter's exchange partner will not be staying with her? S.H. Durham.
Yikes.
Mary says, answer. The mother in question deserves to be marginalized if she would put the guest child's health and safety at risk. You would do her no favors by letting her escape the consequences of her actions. Mary really likes the consequences of her actions, honey. Simply tell her that the child in question is used to a strong degree of personal supervision at home, and you feel she would be happier in a more formal household.
I see.
See Mary as Miss Trunchbore with maybe a riding crop tapping it against her jodhpurs or her riding boot. Mary has strong thoughts on these things. 6:34 then. Now, I've left behind what I needed to know by the Turner Classic Movie Channel for today.
I've called it up as you can at home. Yes.
TCM, then you want the schedule, and then you want to make sure you get Canada, and you want Canada West.
So
we have our time here now where we live.
Right.
For example, 8 o'clock this morning, the Broadway Melody from 1929. No big stars, but it was, I think it had maybe the first Technicolor scene in it and a couple of innovations.
Yes.
And I just like Broadway Melody, the idea. And then later on, one of me faves, well, you got to be a Western fan, let's be honest, Rio Bravo at 5:15 from 1959. John Wayne, Dean Martin, playing a lush, if I remember correctly, and I think Ricky Nelson as a young cowboy. Yes, that's right. Then tonight at 10 o'clock, The Fisher King, which is from 1991 with Robin Williams. And I think Jeff Bridges is
in
that,
one of the Bridges.
Too. So let's see if I can give you something on Sunday, because there were a couple of other things, too. A Star is Born, 5:30 Sunday morning. That's the 1976 version. It's been made several times, as you know. Forbidden Planet at 8 a.m., which is a retelling of Shakespeare's The Tempest, 1956, in a science fiction format with, like, Walter Pigeon is in that. And then, well, Things to Come. That's one of our faves, of course. 10 a.m. Sunday morning from 1936. It's from the H.G. Wells book. Quite spacey in its design and its look. Raymond Massey in that as well.
I don't remember.
And when I was a bookseller.
Yes.
I've told this story before. A man came up to me, H.G. Wells. Do you have H.G. Wells' Things to Come? Shape of Things to Come?
Yes.
I said, no. He wrote quite a lot. We have, you know, Time Machine and that's what they won't let you carry it, will they? And you go, what? I said, well, it's in print. Would you like me to get you a copy? They won't let you carry it.
Do you remember? Did you ever order it in?
He didn't want it. No.
Oh, the Great McGinty. He didn't want it that badly.
The Great McGinty. Real funny. 2:45 tomorrow afternoon. We could all use a laugh. Our Miss Brooks as well. And then at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
Good news, bad news.
What?
6 o'clock Sunday morning. Bells are ringing.
Yes.
From 1960.
Yes.
Judy Holliday.
Yes.
We have three different LPs.
Her and Dean Martin,
yes.
It seems to me.
I think he was miscast in that role.
Bells, well.
And odd thing is,
it's not my favorite Judy Holliday movie.
No, exactly. I have two LPs from the Broadway production.
Right.
And then I found the movie version. Oh. So I brought that with me. And
right.
That's why we don't have the information, because I stuffed whatever was in one of the others.
Right.
Anyway, we're not hearing Dean Martin saying no. Judy Holliday is supposed to be on this cut from Bells Are Ringing.
Okay.
I'm in love with a man, Plaza O-4-4-3. What a perfect relationship. I can't see him, he can't see me. I'm in love with a voice, Plaza O-4-4-3. What a perfect relationship. I talk to him and he just talks to me. And yet I can't help wondering, what does he look like? I wish I knew. What does he look like? Is he 6'7" or 3'2"? Has he eyes of brown or baby blue? Big and mighty or underfed? Trim black mustache or beard of red? Can he dance like Fred Astaire? Is he dark or is he fair? Pompadour or not a hair? Well, I don't care. I'm in love with a man, Plaza O-4-4-3. What a perfect relationship. And that's how things should always be. Our love can never lose its mystery. 'Cause I'll never meet him, and he'll never meet me. No, he'll never meet me. Tough as nails with a black cigar, as handsome as a movie star, stern as an eagle, shy as a dove, a face that only a mother could love. It doesn't matter what he is, I'm his. But he's still just a voice, Plaza O-4-4-3. What a perfect relationship. I can't see him, he can't see me. He calls me mom, he thinks I'm 63. I'll never meet him, and he'll never meet me. No, he'll never meet me.
Well, you get the idea, yes. Judy Holliday, because she takes messages in a small little room. And
yes.
There are so many other voices come into her life.
Well, the operator who, you know, they operate together, I guess, is Gene Stapleton.
Oh, the other one who did Archie Bunker's
yes.
show,
et cetera, yep.
so many
yep.
things. Yes.
Family.
All in the Family.
All in the Family.
Yeah.
Boy, you'd think we'd remember that one. In any case, Judy Holliday falls in love with this voice. He's like a Marlon Brando voice.
You know what that's like, Carol.
Yeah, right. And but it's Dean Martin on the other end
yes.
of the phone. And he's a dentist, but he composes lyrics on an air hose. So it's amusing, but it's...
It should have been so much better because it had Judy Holliday.
Well, exactly.
So look, any other Judy Holliday movie you want to see.
Best.
She didn't make that many before she died.
Yes.
Remember the one with the billboards? She decides
yes.
to promote herself.
Washington Square, somewhere
well,
in New York.
You realize this...
It's great.
Before we talked about people who are famous for being famous,
yeah.
a movie was made.
Right.
About the whole thing? That's it exactly?
Yes, that is exactly
yes,
it.
She
yep.
was very,
yep.
very, very, very
And
good.
In that movie... you know she lives in the same apartment building as Jack Lemmon, and
yep.
they're made for each other.
Yep.
But she falls for that guy.
Some guy
that,
with a sports car.
Yeah, Peter Lawford, I think.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
6:42.
It's one of her best.
So, well, the reason we were talking about
yep.
that because the Turner Classic Movie Channel.
Yes.
I'd like to look at it and just give you a hint. Bells are ringing 6 o'clock tomorrow night
yeah.
on Turner Classic Movie Channel.
Gotta sing, gotta
and
dance.
8:15, What's Up, Doc? Which was funny as well, Barbara Streisand.
I don't think I ever saw that one either.
Yes, I'll leave it at that, because you can also look up TCM for all the other things they do. They're going on a cruise, of course, and they get
oh.
together for this and that. But they'll pick an actor, as I say, for the month of...
A celebrity of the month.
And they'll do
Celebrity
film
of
noir,
the day.
And they'll do musicals, et cetera, yep. et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
So, as Carol says, I'm looking at Judy Holliday, Dean Martin... co-starring Fred Clark, Eddie Foy Jr., screenplay and lyrics by Betty Comden, Adolph Green, You Can't Go Wrong, music by Julie Stein.
That reminds yep. me I have to correct something.
Okay, 6:43.
Right.
Died on this day, 1991, Yves Montand, Italian, French, actor, singer. He was 70. Let's hear him sing A Paris.
Right.
À Paris, quand un amour fleurit, ça fait pendant des semaines deux cœurs qui sourient, tout ça parce que qu'ils s'aiment à Paris. Au printemps, sur les toits, les girouettes tournent et font les coquettes avec le premier vent qui passe indifférent, nonchalant. Car le vent, quand il vient à Paris, n'a plus qu'un seul souci, c'est d'aller musarder dans tous les beaux quartiers de Paris. Le soleil, qui est son vieux copain, est aussi de la fête, et comme deux collégiens, ils s'en vont en goguette dans Paris. Et la main dans la main, ils vont sans se frapper, regardant en chemin si Paris a changé. Il y a toujours des taxis en maraude qui vous chargent en fraude avant le stationnement, oui, encore l'agent des taxis. Au café, on voit n'importe qui voit n'importe quoi, qui parle avec ses mains, qui est là depuis le matin au café. Il y a la Seine, à n'importe quelle heure, elle a ses visiteurs qui la regardent dans les yeux, ce sont ses amoureux à la Seine. Et il y a ceux
ceux qui ont fait leur lit près du lit de la Seine et qui se lavent à midi tous les jours de la semaine dans la Seine. Et les autres, ceux qui en ont assez parce qu'ils en ont bu trop et qui veulent oublier, alors ils jettent à l'eau. Mais la Seine, elle préfère voir les jolis bateaux se promener sur elle et au fil de son eau jouer aux caravelles sur la Seine. Les ennuis, y en a pas qu'à Paris, y en a dans le monde entier. Oui, mais dans le monde entier, y a pas partout Paris. Voilà l'ennui. Juillet, à la lueur des lampions, on danse sans arrêt au son de l'accordéon dans les rues. Depuis qu'à Paris on a pris la Bastille, dans tous les faubourgs, à chaque carrefour, il y a des gars et il y a des filles qui sans arrêt sur les pavés nuit et jour font des tours et des tours à Paris.
Yves Montand, from a CD titled Yves Montand, at his best, volume 1. Suggest something to you right there. Born Yves Olivi, better known as Yves Montand, Italian-French.
Yeah.
Born Yves Olivi in Monsimano, Italy. His father was a broom manufacturer, and his mother was a devout Catholic. I didn't realize that was an occupation, but yeah, it was.
Apparently.
Family left France for France in 1923. Why? Following fascist Benito Mussolini's rise to power. Good move.
Yikes.
Grew up in Marseille. A young man, he worked in his sister's beauty salon, Salon de Coiffure, as well as later on the docks. Began a career in show business as a music hall singer. 1944, discovered by Edith Piaf.
Oh,
in Paris.
I didn't realize.
She made him part of her act.
Of course.
At 6:47.
Hi, I'm Chris Hadfield, author of An Astronaut's Guide to Life on Earth, and you're listening to the Saturday morning program on CKUW FM 95.9.
Time now for a little humor. This goes back to the World War II.
I'm on munitions. I called around at the factory and I saw the foreman. Oh, one of the nicest little fellas you could wish to meet in a day's... he did make a fuss of me. He said, have you had your dinner? I said, no. He said, we have. Then he said, have you brought your cards with you? I said, aye, but I'm too short. He said, too short? Which two? I said, the ace of spades and the two of clubs. I can't find it. He said, I'm not talking about playing cards. We provide them. I said, you do? He said, of course we do. I said, well, would you believe? You can't believe a word they say. They told me that apart from billiards, tennis and golf, there was practically nothing at all to do. Then he said, you're a bit late turning up, aren't you? He said, the war's been on 4 years. I said, aye. So a fellow was just telling me outside as I came. He said, where do you think we'd all be if we were all like you? I said, well, I'm very fond of Blackpool myself, but it's not everybody's meet. He said, you can start right away. I said, start right, what at? He said, what at? Work. What do you think? I said, what do I think? He said, yeah. I said, I wouldn't get the job if I told you. He said, I might have to put you in the women's section, but you seem a bit too old for that. I said, I don't know. What do you work at yourself? I said. He said, me? He said, I don't work. I'm the foreman. I said, anything like that'll suit me. I'm not particular. He said, before you can be a foreman, you've got to have brains. I said, before? He said, yes. I said, like it doesn't matter afterwards. He said, you've got to start on the bottom rung of the ladder and work your way up. I said, I haven't come here to do any of that. He said, any of what? I said, window cleaning. He said, no. Well, he said, all right, you can start tomorrow morning. So I went home and I told the missus. Well, I didn't tell her right away because she hasn't been too well lately, but anyhow, when she came to, she said, "And you're going to start work?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Oh, if my poor mother could only have lived to see this day." She said, "What have you got to do?" I said, "I've got to make tanks." She said, "You have?" I said, "Yes." She said, "How many?" I said, "Oh, I don't know. It all depends how many they want. I've no..." She said, "Well, don't you know how many they do want?" I said, "Oh, thousands." She said, "Thousands?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Well, what time are you going to get home to your tea?" I said, "If we're a couple of thousand tanks short on the day," I said, I might not get home at all for any tea." She said, "Have they got a canteen there?" I said, "Well, of course they've got a canteen. They've got canteens in all these munition factories." She said, "Is it a dry canteen?" I said, "Oh, I never thought to ask." She said, "Well, suppose it is a dry canteen." I said, "Well, it's all right. There's no harm done. I've signed nothing yet." Then she said, "Will you be on nights?" I said, "Well, of course, all the factories work night shifts. I thought you knew that." She said, and you'll be on nights?" I said, "Yes, very likely every night, as far as I know." "Oh," she said, "then I'll send it out east to our Harry." I said, "Send what out east to our Harry?" She said, "Your nightshirt." She's no brains. She doesn't concentrate or something. I don't know. But last night I should have been home for my tea at 5 o'clock, and I didn't get home till 10. And the missus said, she said, "Where have you been till now?" She said, "I've had your tea ready since 5 o'clock, and it's 10 now." I said, "I know." I told her. I said, "Well, it couldn't be helped. I've been helping Charlie Evans to flit. He's moved into a little house at the top of that hill in the next street, and we started at 5 o'clock, and we've only just finished." She said, "And it's taken two of you 5 hours? She said, "Well, when I went round with you the other Sunday to Charlie Evans for tea," she said, "all the furniture I saw was a table, a few chairs, a bed, and a couple of pictures." She said, "You don't mean to tell me it took two men 5 hours to move that lot?" I said, "No, no." I said, It wasn't the furniture that was the trouble, it was the dolly tub." She said, "The dolly tub?" I said, "Aye." "Well," I said, "it took us nearly 3 hours getting that up that hill." She said, "Two men, 3 hours to roll a dolly tub up a hill?" She said, I'm only a woman, but I could have rolled it up there in 10 minutes. I said, "Now don't talk rubbish, Rita. You couldn't have rolled this one." She said, "Oh, and why not?" I said, "Because it was full of dirty water." Anyhow, she's no brains. It's waste of time trying to talk to drive sense in. "Oh, but I must get back. There's all those thousands of tanks wanted, and I haven't finished one yet. It's dreadful. I must be off. I'll see you later. I must go."
And he did. Rob Wilton as the munition worker. From a box set of Ma, I Miss Your Apple Pie, various artists from Great Comedy of the War Years there, 6:54. Carol McKibben, there was talk. Yes. There was talk about the jumble.
Oh, yes, sure.
J.U.M.B. Lee, jumble, but you're feeling low. Jumble, mild and
I had
gentle
trouble with
good,
the first word,
tasting.
But I don't think you will.
Picnic, picnic.
Do you want a...
Bozo. No.
Five-letter word or a six-letter word?
Five is good.
Okay. I'll tell you why I had trouble after you solve it.
W-H-Y.
Okay. P-T-Z-O-A.
Topaz.
That's right.
That's right.
But when I looked at it, I saw Azopt, which is one of my eye drugs.
Holy moly. Once you're locked into that, you haven't got a hope of figuring out.
Yep.
There's still a couple of words haunting me from a few days back. But all right, ALCAP today.
Okay.
There's some debate about this, because I've got something different from Wiki. It just goes to show you on this day I have ALCAP. What day is it today?
Today.
It's November, isn't it? There you go.
It's November 7th, or sorry, 9th.
Well, I've got... Oh, I see. No, this is true. On this day in 1938, Al Capp, cartoonist of Little Abner, creates Sadie Hawkins Day.
Oh, right.
Do you remember Sadie Hawkins Day?
I do. I missed out this year.
That means I missed out this year as well.
That's right.
Well, we don't see this anymore. A huge bouquet, carnation-like bouquet, thing stuck on your chest. What do you call those?
A corsage,
Corsage, mean? That's it.
Okay.
With maybe a lollipop or two, and you had to wear them, and you went to a movie, and the girl paid.
Wow. That's your those big
were
memory.
And it's very nice, yes.
Okay.
Well, you can forget that. But what we want to talk about is Al Capp, of course, because he was known for the comic strip Little Abner.
Yes.
Oh, he had got really a streak to him as well. He went a little bizarre as he got older because... Well, that strip actually dealt with urban experiences, too, in the North United States until the year he invented Little Abner. He was from Connecticut, but he spent 43 years writing about the fictional southern town of Dogpatch.
Right.
And, of course, it was turned into a musical, Little Abner.
Yes.
And
why
we
not?
Have Stubby K with that, with Jubilation T. Cornpone.
Scarlet, honey, it's high time you knew that our town was founded by that beloved man a setting up there on that horse, Jubilation T. Cornpone. The greatest fighting general and military strategist the Confederacy ever knew.
Was he brave?
Brave? Why, J.T. Cornpone didn't know the meaning of the word fear. Terror, yes, but fear never. And all over the countryside, there's monuments commemorating the names of his famous battles.
Such as?
Cornpone's disaster. Cornpone's misjudgment, Cornpone's catastrophe, and Cornpone's humiliation. When we fought the Yankees and annihilation was near, who was there to lead the charge that took us safe to the rear? Why, it was Jubilation T. Cornpone. Oh, toot your own horn, Pone. Jubilation T. Cornpone, a man who knew no fear.
Tell us what,
yes, sir.
When we almost had him, but the issue still was in doubt. Who suggested the retreat that turned it into a rout? Why, it was
Jubilation T. Cornpone!
Correct! All tattered and torn, Pone.
Jubilation T. Cornpone, he kept us high enough.
With our ammunition gone and faced with utter defeat. Who was it that burned the crops and left us nothing to eat?
Why, it was Jubilation T. Cornpone.
Old September morn, Pone.
Jubilation T. Cornpone.
The pants blown off his seat.
Hooray!
When it seemed like our brave boys might keep on fighting for months. Who took pity on them and capitulated at once?
Why, it was Jubilation T. Cornpone.
Unshaven and shorn, Pone.
Jubilation T. Cornpone.
He weren't nobody's dunce.
Why, it was Jubilation T. Cornpone.
Reconnoitering to flank the enemy's rear. Circled through the piney woods and disappeared for a year.
Why, it was Jubilation T. Cornpone.
Oh, treat him with scorn, Pone.
Yeah! Jubilation T. Cornpone, the missing mountaineer.
Who became so famous with a reputation so great.
Who?
That he ran for president and didn't carry a state. Old wouldn't be sworn, Pone.
Jubilation T. Cornpone. He made the country wait.
Stonewall Jackson got his name by standing firm in the fray. Who was known to all his men as good old paper mache?
Why, it was Jubilation T. Cornpone.